Hello and welcome once again to the Heads and Tails Cricket Podcast, where nostalgia, dosti and cricket come together to spin a yarn once a week, best enjoyed through rose-tinted glasses and with a glass in your hand. I'm Nitin Sundar and I'm back with my partner in podcasting crime, Abhishek Chopra. Chops, how are you doing?
All good, Nitin. Thank you so much. Always fun to be back on the pod. This week, we have one of our blockbuster World Cup matches in the offing, and I can't wait to get to it.
And the reason we are getting to a blockbuster World Cup match before we reveal what that game is because the Asia Cup is almost upon us, followed by the World Cup. And if things go to plan, you could have India and Pakistan playing each other up to five times during the course of these two tournaments. So we have a surfeit of India-Pakistan matches to look forward to in the coming days. And we thought the best way to usher that in would be to talk about a classic India-Pakistan match.
Absolutely.
But before that, a quick look at what's been happening in the world of cricket. Of course, like we said, the Asia Cup is almost upon us. The Indian team has been announced for this Asia Cup. And some very interesting selections that Tilak Varma makes the cut, potentially looking at an ODI debut barely months before the One Day World Cup. And Sanju Samson has not made it to the final squad, and he's now going to be a third wicket-keeping reserve behind Ishan Kishan and, of course, KL Rahul, who continues to have certain injury problems that might put his Asia Cup and World Cup in jeopardy, fingers crossed. Thoughts on the team, Chops?
I think it's a pretty... well-balanced team, can't find too many faults with it, except perhaps one could say the exclusion of Chahal is a little harsh. But then I think whether you like it or not, every single team these days wants to have a super, super long batting lineup. And ground fielding has always been crucial in white ball cricket. Both of them are not strong suits for Chahal at all. Very weak suits, actually. And so he has been given the cut, and we have three left-arm spinners. We have Ravindra Jadeja, we have Akshar Patel, and we have Kuldeep Yadav. You could make a case for all of them being very different in their own right, but three left-arm spinners is a big call. Let's see if they take the same squad or more or less the same squad to the World Cup as well.
Indeed, lots of depth, batting depth in the squad. You have Jadeja and Akshar Patel, of course, as all-rounders. You also have Hardik Pandya and Shardul Thakur. And it looks like there's a good chance at least three out of those four might end up being in the starting 11 for many of the games that are coming up. So you will not have too many number 11s batting together. That's the good part. The bad part is you only have one specialist spinner. So there's going to be a lot of pressure there on Kuldeep Yadav. And who knows, maybe this is his chance to shine. The One Day World Cup tickets also have finally gone out on sale. Have you been refreshing Book My Show, trying to book tickets, Chops?
No, I have already given up all hope. I'm going to watch almost all of the cricket that's going to come up from the comfort of my home and perhaps with the company of a few friends if things go all right. But I don't think the stadium experience in India is anything to look forward to. I will still continue to hope that I get to watch some test matches in stadiums where the crowd is inevitably lighter. But I don't think white ball cricket, IPL, etc. is the way to go if you're a cricket fan who's concerned about their safety.
That is a very wise decision, I might say. As Chop said, the best way to watch cricket is at home, in front of your television, with a bunch of friends cheering your team on. That's exactly how a lot of us must have watched the 1996 World Cup many years back, one of the early tournaments that really exploded on television, really brought the might of the Indian cricket fan in front of cricket broadcasts to the fore. Chops, we're going to talk, of course, about one of the greatest ever one-day games. I think I wouldn't be remiss in saying so. India versus Pakistan, the quarterfinal of the 1996 World Cup as a means to preview the upcoming Asia Cup. Thoughts, Chops, even before you go into nostalgia, how does it feel to just think about this game?
I feel absolutely ecstatic. I don't know about you. I wasn't old enough to be allowed to watch cricket with friends. I was just 8 years old, and I had the company of my parents to watch this match. And I would definitely say that the match made them roll back their ears. They were cheering and you know, egging India on, as would an 8-year-old boy. And yeah, it was one of those moments where you learned as much about you know, the game itself as you did about fandom, I would say. So yeah, I mean, it's one of those very, very happy memories that you can always go back to whenever you're feeling down about a cricket result.
You know, the funny thing is, if you look at World Cups these days, right, and you have one or two World Cups that are happening every couple of years, the World Cups are nowadays designed in a way that India and Pakistan definitely play each other in the league stage. And there is, of course, the hope that they might meet again later in the tournament. And I think that the choice of marketing cricket World Cups as, you know, potential India-Pakistan games being the centerpiece of the tournament, apart from the knockout games, which may or may not feature these teams, I think that tone really was set in 96 after this game. Because this World Cup, of course, you had 12 teams participating. It was, and 8 of those were going to make it to the quarterfinals. So the 4 teams that were not going to make it was quite clear to everyone right at the start of the tournament, because you had Zimbabwe, you had Kenya, you had United Arab Emirates, and Holland back in the day, not Netherlands, but Holland. These 4 teams were definitely not going to make it to the quarters, and that's exactly how it panned out. So right from the beginning, it was down to those 4 quarterfinal games, followed by the semis and the final. And the potential India-Pakistan clash at some stage in the knockouts of this tournament were the big selling point in the lead up to, you know, the latter stages of this tournament. And the anticipation before this game in Bangalore was just quite another level. I remember, if I think back to my cricket watching days, this really was the first match that I remember really vividly. And I almost remember it as an event that went on for many days. It wasn't just the match that happened on that day, but I remember the build-up very, very clearly, even today. And Imran Khan was in the commentary box for this game. I don't know if you remember. And I don't think he did too much of commentary during the course of this World Cup itself. Of course, he was the captain of Pakistan when they won the World Cup before this. So a lot of Imran Khan's opinions in this game are something that quite stand out as well.
I remember, you know, watching the pitch report that Ravi Shastri had hosted, a much, much younger Ravi Shastri. And right after completing it, he goes to the side of the pitch where he meets a regally dressed Imran Khan in a Pathani suit. And there's an interview that happens where, you know, Shastri quizzes him on the pitch and, you know, the comparison to the 1987 test that Pakistan had won in Bangalore. Yeah. And then he asks him for the team combination and what would you do if you bat, and all of those things are there. I mean, you realize just one, the sheer amount of respect that those two professionals have for each other. And two, even at that moment, which is, you know, outside the match is yet to begin, you realize that this is big. It's yeah. not like any other game you've watched so far. And this is really going to, you know, test everyone as a cricket fan. And it's exactly how it turned out to be. Bangalore was known to be a pretty laid-back crowd as far as cricket was concerned. But this one is where, you know, the passion and the aggression comes out to the fore. The crowd build-up was so much that Venkatesh Prasad, the Bangalore boy who was one of India's best performers in this match, he says on the very same show how he was coming from home to the hotel for the team meeting, and then the team, you know, departs from there. The local boys get to stay at home. And he had started pretty early because he was, you know, very early in his career, wanted to be on time for things. And even then, the number of people going into the stadium was so high that he has to literally get out of his car and run to the hotel, which is near the stadium, apparently. And that's how he's able to reach on time. Otherwise, he wouldn't have made it for the team meeting.
Yeah, lots of people made it to the ground early. One person who did not make it to the field was Pakistan's captain. Wasim Akram famously did not play this game. And the news that he was not going to play came out only on the day of the game, I think minutes probably before the toss, when Amir Suhail was named as the captain. But as Wasim Akram clarified later, he was injured. And he had injured himself in the previous game against New Zealand. where he went down to play a sweep shot against Dion Nash and injured his side, one of his muscles on the side. And if you look at that scorecard, you already can see that Akram batted in that innings, but did not bowl. And the only reason ostensibly why he would not have bowled was because he was already injured. So I'm surprised that the controversy around why Akram did not play this game raged for so long, because all you had to do was see the previous game scorecard to know why he did not play.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, it's one of those things which, I mean, looking back, you can say that the rumor or the controversy was not without good reason, because of what we would learn many years later. But when we did, it became like a pick and choose, fest almost for fans, where any performance, any match in the later part of the 90s could be just, you know, straight away attributed to fixing. And I really don't think that was the case here as far as Akram's absence is concerned.
So Akram's not playing, which means Pakistan are potentially a bowler short. They still have five bowling options, and they're very clear that they wanted five bowling options. But it's a very cagey start to the match, because Tendulkar and Sidhu, you're off to a very solid start, but not the flyers that you were used to seeing in that World Cup. India motoring along quite gently. I think they put on close to 100 runs in the first 20 overs. And Sachin then gets out in the 30s to Ataur Rahman.
Yeah. I think Sachin never really got into, you know, his usual flow. He had a brilliant, absolutely wonderful World Cup. But this match, right from, you know, the get-go, you felt that he was not really, you know, in his element. Sidhu was doing quite well. He was outscoring Sachin almost throughout the partnership. But his shot making, I have to say, was non-elegance personified.
As it always is.
Yeah, I mean, some of the shots that he particularly hits on the leg side are so muscular that it's almost like he's, you know, trying to punch the ball with his hands, and the bat's coming in the way. I mean, it's leading to a good result for India in the sense that, you know, they're motoring along even after Sachin gets out, and you have the next few wickets, you know, also going out, going off cheaply. And there is a lull in the scoring as well until, you know, Ajay Jadeja really goes along. But I think invaluable contribution from Sidhu at the top of the order. For that era, 93 of 115, which is what Sidhu ends up scoring, is a priceless innings. And in a high pressure game like India-Pakistan, you have to really doff your hat off to him for what he did.
And you can see that the pitch is already slowing down. Amir Sohail, the captain, comes on and bowls five overs. Mushtaq Ahmed bowls a lot of overs as well. You see, like you mentioned,
Salim Malik
bowls his canny leg cutters. So, you know, you had one of the funniest actions in cricket, as far as I'm concerned. But you could see that the pitch was slowing down, right? From the way you described Sidhu's batting, you have Sanjay Manjrekar slogging across the line and getting out. And then you have Azharuddin, who comes out and hits one massive violent six. I think the six you probably want to talk about.
Yeah, I think it's the 41st over or something that is being bowled by Mushtaq Ahmed. Now, Mushtaq Ahmed was a pretty good leg spinner. There was a phase in the 90s when you would have these feature interviews in Sports Star. You would have same kind of batters or same kind of bowlers being interviewed together, and it would be mostly about, you know, the form of bowling or batting that they did, openers or middle order batters or pacers or spinners, etc. And you would have these interviews of Kumbley and Shane Warne and Mushtaq Ahmed. Mushtaq never reached the heights that the other two did, but in that phase he was pretty good. But I think in this match, he ends up proving a little ineffective. The 41st over is perhaps, there's just one single scored off him till the fifth ball. And you see Azharuddin struggling a little bit, not able to get the singles away. He's beaten outside the off stump and there are dot balls, etc. And you sense something is building up. You know, even as an 8-year-old, you sense that, you know, at this stage of the match, run scoring can't be so slow. And then that six is just amazing. I don't know why it's stuck in my memory. You know, it's been stuck in my memory for so long. Dances down the track, And it's such a straight six right over the stumps. There's no question about, you know, what is the number of runs that shot is going to get, Azhar, as soon as the ball is hit. But just the beauty of it, just the flow of it is what really caught my mind.
Yeah.
Azhar obviously doesn't do too well in this innings. And this is one of three sixes that India end up hitting. The other two, we are obviously going to talk about. But in my mind, it's just one of those shots that gets imprinted in your memory for some reason.
Indeed. It wasn't a great World Cup for Azharuddin. He scored 70-odd against Sri Lanka in the game that India lost before the semi-final. And I think other than that, there were barely any runs from Azhar in this World Cup. And he would then go on to lose his captaincy as well soon after the World Cup. So that was there. But yeah, he managed to get away that 1-6. You also had Vinod Kambli place one lovely looking cover drive, but then get snaffled by Mushtaq Ahmed, bowls a googly and gets some bolt. And that brings out our man of the moment, Ajay Jadeja, who for many years was my favorite cricketer. And I think it all goes back down to this match. And I think this is probably true for a lot of people who might have probably claimed that Ajay Jadeja was their favorite cricketer. It might have boiled down to what they remember fondly of this game, where there was absolutely nothing wrong that he could do. The very first ball that Ajay Jadeja faced is an in-swinging Yorker from Waqar Yunis. He's caught plumb in front, absolutely plumb, dead to rights. But the umpire lets him stay. That's how it goes, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And before he got into that mad flow against Waqar Yunis, there's the Nayan Mongia run out, which, yeah. I mean, for all practical purposes, you could blame it on Jadeja's poor calling. But that is when I also remember learning about a run out rule, which was that if by the time you have actually collected the ball, if one bail has been taken off the stumps,
yes,
you can still use the ball in your hands to take off the other bail and it would be considered a run out.
Yeah, this was a very much an edge case. I think Mushtaq Ahmed was the fielder who manages to first fumble the throw and knock off one bail, but the other bail stays on the stumps. So he collects the ball and he still has enough time to knock that second bail off. And Mongia scored well shot. And Jadeja catches fire after that. India going along quite sedately. The crowd is unsure whether to celebrate, whether to be happy, whether to be anxious, because India heading for a 250-odd score, which doesn't look great on a small ground. The ball's coming onto the bat and all of that. But the 48th over is when Jadeja starts going after Waqar Yunis. And the funny thing is, so 40 runs, Waqar, who had gone for, I think, 27 runs in his first 8 overs, concedes 40 of his last two. And people keep saying that Jadeja took 40 runs of Waqar. But in reality, there were lots of runs that were scored by Kumble and Srinath as well. Right?
Yes.
And I think each of them hits two boundaries each in these two overs. So that's 16 runs, which Jadeja did not score. He himself does well as well. He gets a couple of sixes and a couple of fours away. Yeah. But the mythicality of this innings is such that people really think Jadeja on that day did something like, you know, he had five sixes of Waqar Yunis over or something. But that's actually not what happened. He landed four very good blows and coincidentally of four successive deliveries. But across those two overs for 6-4 and 6-4, 4-6-4-6 was the sequence of what he pulled off. But I think what really stands out was the sort of shots he played and the way the ball went to the boundary, each of those shots. And each of them is a classic in its own right, right? The first four is a smashing cover drive. It's an overpitched delivery outside off stump and Jadeja just whacks it. And Jadeja was one of these players who wasn't really the most elegant, but he really could time the ball well, right? When he got going, he could time the ball really, really well. He used to play these single-handed shots, which was, you know, one of his specialties, especially outside the off stump. He would take the bottom hand off and just guide the ball with his left hand. So you had that kind of hitting from Jadeja here. You first had that cover drive. And then Waqar Yunis sends what you probably expect of Waqar Yunis to bowl at that stage. You know, it's very full. It's swinging in. It's heading towards middle and leg. And Jadeja, who earlier was almost out plumb LBW, as we spoke about, gets his legs out of the way. I think that's the one thing he was very clear about. He did not want to get LBW. Gets his legs out of the way and whips that second ball, that first six of his, over deep mid wicket, and the ball seems to just fly high and far at the same time, right? And back then, you also had this thing where the cameras are not too clear, the air quality is not that great, the background is quite clouded, so you can't really see the ball. You just have a sense of where it is going based on the arc that the camera is drawing, and it draws a very big arc for this shot.
Yeah, I mean, that was quite an amazing shot. And I mean, even by that time, you had this almost mythical image of Waqar Yunus, and Waqar Yunus in the death overs with, you know, his sand shoe crusher balls, which would just inevitably get a batsman plumb LBW or clean bowled. And I don't know if he was, you know, like deep inside the crease, or he was, you know, doing something else in particular with respect to, you know, what Waqar was going to dish out. The one thing that he did know was Waqar was going to keep going for the Yorker. And if he could, as you mentioned, take away his legs and just manage to sort of hit through the line or hit through the line after the swing has sort of taken place, it's going to fetch him runs aplenty. And that's what he manages to do.
And then there's that final six that he hits, which is over the offside. It's over wide long off, which is just, you know, a breathtaking shot. If you thought that previous six was crazy, this one was something else altogether. I have no idea how he generated pace on that, because he again goes back and he creates room for himself. There isn't so much of room. And then he just lumps the ball. It's I don't know how exactly to describe that shot. He just lofts it, lofts it straight through the offside. It's such a very, very unorthodox batting, right? But the fundamentals of timing are just so perfect in that shot, and it flies well outside the ground, and Tony Greig loses it, and you know, the match is really caught fire. He gets out next ball, tries the same shot, holds out, but India managed to go from what looked like a 250 total to a very, very fighting score. And Pakistan, as was their habit back in those days, bowled their overs slowly and were docked one over. So they would only get 49 overs for the chase. And now they have an imposing target. They need to chase 288 to win this game. So we've described three sixes in the Indian innings. And so I'm going to put you on the spot, Chops. Which was your favorite six in this innings? I think it was Azharuddin, like you've already said. But was one of these the favorite sixes that you saw in this match?
I would definitely say, I mean, the other six is, I don't think, my favorite. It's just something that like stuck in my head and I keep going to it again and again. Like in the YouTube video that's there for this match, I now know exactly where that six is going to come. So I can directly go there and watch that six. But that second Jadeja six, which is over long off, as you mentioned, I mean, the mechanics of that shot are perfectly indescribable. I don't know how he's able to, you know, loft it with a cross bat from that length, and it goes soaring into the stands. And, you know, because of, you know, how TV quality was back then, you don't see the ball. It's just like, it could be a top edge. It could be something that's going towards extra cover. Yeah. It could be a return catch for the bowler, but it's six.
It's somehow gone for six over wide log off. Yeah, indeed.
It's just amazing. It's one of those shots where, you know, I think the it's going to become even bigger in terms of the legendary status that it has already acquired.
Absolutely. But my favorite six in this match was yet to be played. And that gets played in the second innings when Saeed Anwar walks across his stumps, picks up Javagal Srinath, who is bowling it well outside off stump, and dumps him behind square leg for a six. And this one actually, you know, now it's night is settled. The camera is actually able to track the ball. So you actually can see that ball dropping very slowly in the background, in the black background, well over the boundary. And it is such an incredible shot, because unlike the Jadeja shot, which is unorthodox and hence so audacious and tough to make sense of, this is actually a very orthodox shot, but a shot that nobody else could play, because you need to have wrists made of, I don't know, you know, special elastic material. Vibranium wrists are the only way you could have played that shot. And there was only one player in the world who had it. And Saeed Anwar, during this phase, and I think for a few years after this, was probably the most attractive batsman to watch in my book.
And this was after India were getting mauled by these two gentlemen, Saeed Anwar and Amir Sohail, in the starting blows of the second innings, that in the fifth over, Kumble had to come. And I think in that over itself, or next over for Kumble, there's a six that he hits of Kumble also.
Yes.
And again, that phase of the match after, you know, we were all thinking that the momentum, that famous cricket word, which I don't know what meaning it has, the momentum was with us after the Ajay Jadeja innings. These guys wasted no time in resting it away. And I mean, you could put the TV on full volume and yet there was nothing coming out of it except the shot making and the ball pinging off the bat.
Because the sound of the ball hitting the boundary boards. You would hear only those two sounds. The 12th man, the famous 12th man, which is the 40,000 people at the Chinmayaswamy Stadium, go completely silent. There was definite tension in the ground.
Yeah.
It seemed like if Pakistan were going to win this game, and at this stage it looked like they were going to win because the 84 for no loss and 10 overs, India don't have a fifth bowler, which means which means Jadeja, Tendulkar, etc. are going to have to bowl 10 overs. And these first 10 overs have been bowled by India's best bowlers, right? Kumble, Srinath and Prasad, and they've all been taken to the cleaners. They've not got a single wicket. There was so much tension in that ground that it was almost like sitting, you know, close to a powder keg, waiting for something to go wrong. And people were very relieved when eventually the tide starts to turn and India start dominating this game. But during this partnership and for a while afterwards, it did not seem that way. And Anwar is the first to get out. First ball of the 11th over, he miscues a very similar shot that he tries of Srinath. And that gets caught at mid-on. But Ijaz Ahmed comes out and continues the damage along with Amir Sohail, who has now gone past 50. And is growing in confidence so much that he's pointing to different corners of the ground and depositing Venkatesh Prasad to them.
Here's another interesting tidbit. During COVID, when obviously live cricket was not on, Cricinfo started something called the Retro Report or Retro Live or something, where they basically picked up matches for which they had the full 100 overs or whatever it was available. And they just watched it and did ball by ball because they had nothing better to do. I think the commentary job done for this match was fantastic. And as preparation for the podcast, I've managed to read almost all of it, which is not a mean feat at all, I would say about myself. And this is the commentary. Oh, blessed are the meek. Nothing meek about Prasad's celebration, though. He has come back in the best way possible. This time, Sohail tries the old trick of shuffling across and then opening up the offside by clearing his front leg. Prasad bowls the old-fashioned top-of-off delivery and Sohail plays all around it. The off-stump goes for a walk and Prasad shows him the way to the dressing room. High fives among the Indians, elation in the stands. Pakistan 113 for 2.
Amazing. After having got this wicket, Prasad is a completely different bowler because he then starts delivering those leg cutters. He nearly gets Inzamam very early in his innings. And Mongia nearly pulls off a great catch with a short leg cutter that, you know, just leaves Inzamam and he nicks it behind. He nearly gets Ijaz Ahmed. And India just come back into the game, right? Just like that, the game starts turning from this moment onwards because Pakistan start floundering. And I think at this stage, they're not really floundering so much against the Indian bowlers, but they're floundering because the Indian crowd has gotten behind them. And they just feel the pressure of a World Cup game.
Yeah. If this was one of those debates where, you know, bowlers don't get enough man of the match awards, etc. Prasad, I think, totally has a case for it. Yes, the first wicket to fall was due to Srinath, getting Saeed Anwar to play a false shot. But from 113 for 1, Prasad takes out Amir Sohail in that glorious dismissal that we just described. Nine runs later, he takes out Ijaz Ahmed. There's a catch at cover, which is Srinath. And then 10 runs later, Inzamam goes out. And that's one of the best leg cutters that he'll ever bowl. Inzamam is trying to, you know, play his usual shot down towards third man for a single. But the leg cutter does its magic. And as you mentioned, Mongia takes a beautiful catch. So I really think, you know, the floodgates in this match for India after that absolutely demonic first wicket partnership, the floodgates were opened by Prasad's amazing bowling.
Yeah, 3 wickets in 4 overs. And if you're getting Anwar, Ijaz and Inzamam as an Indian bowler, you've done You know, you've wiped away years and years, decades of trauma by getting them in a World Cup game. But after getting these three wickets, you have, of course, Javed Miandad for the last time ever comes out to bat in an innings that many people later likened to MS Dhoni's final innings, where two past masters, clearly masters of the past, you know, well past their prime, trying to do something, trying to fight against time itself and take a game, take a chase deep the way they knew best and just not able to do it in their final World Cup games. End up getting run out and it ends up on the losing side.
Yeah,
nobody gets a fairy tale at the end of it.
But when Javed Miandad comes out, I can see the trepidation on my parents' face because he
yes.
had literally dug holes with that last ball six that we've spoken about on this very podcast. And I mean, there was genuine fear. And then there's a 50-odd run partnership between Javed Miandad and Salim Malik. Salim Malik was another old war horse who had all the tricks, some of them very wrong ones, up his sleeve. And they're not letting India breathe easy. They're not perhaps getting close to the run rate that's required by Pakistan, but they're not letting India breathe easy. And finally, I think it's Kumble who breaks the partnership first by getting Salim Malik LBW. And then Rashid Latif comes out. And, this is the thing about Pakistan. I think multiple
yes.
people have described it. But the best description is Manjrekar in his book, where he says Pakistan's batting for, all its glory was just like a lizard. You cut the head off and the tail still continues to wag.
My goodness. That's a great way to describe it. And this was, like we've said on this podcast in the past, in Pakistan, you either have the Moin Khan year or you have a Rashid Latif year. And it used to keep alternating. 1996 happened to be a Rashid Latif year. And as an Indian fan, you only used to wonder, like, how the hell do you have two such wonderful wicketkeepers to choose from while we don't have one that's half as good? But Latif comes out and plays, again, hits two massive sixes out of the blue and tries to reignite the chase because after all the hard work that Anwar and Sohail had done against the top Indian bowlers, you had Miandad and Salim Malik really struggling against Tendulkar and Jadeja, who were bowling the fifth bowler's quota. So while India were not able to get wickets at that stage, they quietly got the 10 overs that they needed to out of the way so that Kumble and the rest of the fast bowlers could come and close things out. And then Latif starts going after the spinners again. So, and you had Venkatapathy Raju as well.
And there's again another commentary gem, Richie Beno. You've mentioned him, at the start of the podcast, how he mentions Bangalore as the software capital of the world in 1996. He's on commentary when Rashid Latif hits one of his sixes, which is off Javagal Srinath. He just steps outside the leg stump and then deposits one straight down the ground. And as the ball is sailing into the crowd, again, you can't see. So you're wondering, you're waiting for the commentator to describe what's happened. Is it going to the fielder? Is it going off as a one bounce four or something? And Beno says that the long on fielder is there. And then as the ball is finally getting deposited in the crowd, he says, but he needs to be 45 feet tall.
Yes, that's and very deadpan. He's not getting excited or excitable by any of this. He's just narrating it as he sees it. And it's the perfect description because Latif, like Syed Anwar, is a small-built man, right? You mentioned Yuvraj Singh and those big sixes through the leg side. But Yuvraj was a big, muscular guy. Syed Anwar wasn't and Rashid Latif isn't. So when they hit big sixes, your jaw literally drops. But those were the closing blows, really, from Pakistan. They're still trying very hard now to make up for lost time in this innings. Javed Miandad is still there, stuck, trying very, very hard until that man, who can't do anything wrong on this day, Ajay Jadeja, gets him out, run out. And what happens after that? The Chinnaswamy Stadium does not stand up and applaud Javed Miandad, one of the greatest cricketers who ever played the game, in his last game.
Yeah, and I think it's in some book or some podcast that Ramchandra Guha, noted cricket writer, historian, he mentions how he was in the stands and he got up to applaud and, clap off Miandad after his last innings and clap off that famous white helmet of his, which was perhaps a symbol of peace, finally peace in this match. And the rest of the Bangalore crowd couldn't care less. I mean, for them, it's good results.
They probably gave him nasty stares for standing up and applauding Javed Mian. And I think Guha actually says this was the last time an Indian crowd cheered for, or this was already past the last time when an Indian crowd actually cheered the opposition. It was a sad reality of where cricket was heading.
Yeah, this was Pakistan's first loss against India since the 1992 World Cup. I don't know how many matches they played, but you know that was the gap. It was also their first loss against India in India since March 1987, when the scores were actually level and they had a rule from the past, well and truly from the past, where the match was awarded to India even after the scores were tied because they lost fewer wickets.
That's the way it goes. A big, big win for India. I remember a news channel had gone and interviewed the Indian players or the Indian players' families after this match because India had a very big semi-final game coming up. I remember the interviewer asking Ajay Jadeja's father what he expects from his son in the semi-final. And Jadeja Senior in chaste Malayalam says, "Enikki moon dadutunnu oru century venam. I want a century from my son." How much did Jadeja score in the semi-final? He scored zero. And he's bowled round the legs by Sanath Jayasurya. Nobody remembers that India actually had to play a semi-final because in the post-game presser, Amir Sohail says, "I wish India the best of luck for the final." And India didn't make that final, of course.
Yeah, I think it's Ian Chappelli who's doing the post-match presentation. And again, I mean, you would say it's perhaps speaking too early or whatever, but he asks Azhar about the Sri Lanka match, the semi-final that's coming up. And Azhar just says, "I'm playing at my luckiest ground."
Well, he was lucky until the coin fell in his favor at the toss. And after that, it all went pear-shaped.
It's just amazing how Amit Sohail says good luck to India for the final and Mohammad Azharuddin says I'm playing at my luckiest ground. And I mean, just amazing how, that semi-final turned out. And again, Manjrekar, who's been very incisive in his book, I think one of the best cricket books in recent times, he says that India simply lost the Sri Lanka match because they couldn't get over the hangover of the Pakistan win. They went out that evening as they were being led by their ringleader, Ajay Jadeja. They went to a couple of nightclubs or whatever. And everywhere they went, they were treated like gods who had descended from heaven. And I mean, how do you get past that? I mean, of course, there's Sri Lanka and you've already lost to Sri Lanka. But it's perhaps very difficult to, get into that kind of space, mind space again. And India were promptly dispatched back home from the Eden Gardens. But we shall always have Chinnaswamy.
Absolutely.
So that's been us on yet another episode of Heads and Tails to preview the India-Pakistan clashes coming up in this year's Asia Cup and the World Cup. We went back to an amazing India-Pakistan match, a match in which, thankfully, India ended up on the winning side. And how? The 1996 World Cup quarterfinal between India and Pakistan at Bangalore. If you've enjoyed this episode, please give us 5 stars on Spotify or the highest rating on whatever audio platform you listen to your podcast on. Please tell us more matches of this kind which you would like to cover, especially from the World Cup since it's coming up. And please tell your friends and family about us. Till we meet again with yet another World Cup classic, it's goodbye from Nitin and from me.
You were listening to Heads and Tails, hosted by Abhishek Chopra and Nitin Sundar. Produced by Audiomatic. Producers for Audiomatic, Rajesh Tahil and Avdhoot Khanolkar. Assistant producer, Piyakash.